So I was asked today to kind of give you an overview of some of the work that we have done in defining the central role of the gut in HIV disease. So I wanted to give you just a little bit of a background first. HIV rapidly establishes a disseminated, productive infection within every lymphoid tissue within the body very rapidly after acquisition. And the manifestations of HIV infection are classically seen in lymphatic organs, including the lymph nodes, the spleen, the gut, and the mucosal-associated lymphoid tissue. Infection triggers potent host inflammatory and adaptive immune responses, establishing and sustaining a state of chronic, persistent immune activation and inflammation. And in fact, chronic immune activation and inflammation is a remarkable hallmark of HIV disease that continues throughout all courses of HIV infection in the absence of antiretroviral therapy and actually persists at elevated levels during antiretroviral therapy. So understanding the mechanisms driving persistent chronic immune activation and inflammation both before and during antiretroviral therapy is critically important because chronic immune activation and inflammation are strongly correlated with increased morbidities and reduced mortality in antiretrovirally treated individuals with HIV infection. And so we've learned a lot about this disease in human clinical studies. And these particular studies have been absolutely invaluable for our understanding of HIV disease. However, most of what we've learned about this disease actually comes from studies using the peripheral blood, but this is a disease of the tissues, and in order to really understand the immunopathology of this disease, you have to go into the tissues. And while we can collect tissues from HIV-infected individuals, there are some challenges with these studies. There are enrollment challenges in studies, access to clinical care, cost is high, ethical considerations and challenges depending on the types of therapeutic interventions that you're trying to study. There are health risks with certain populations, disease timing limitations, particularly if you're trying to understand very early events, this can be very challenging. And there are limitations in history and records of various treatments and comorbidities and also co-infections. And most importantly, for the things that I do, there's limited tissue sampling with human studies. Non-human primate research really has provided many critical insights into HIV disease that are simply not feasible or practical in the clinical setting. And while SIV infection of macaque species is not identical to HIV infection, it's clearly a different virus and it's a different host, these infections really recapitulate all of the key and major features of HIV disease, really represent one of the most fundamental and close animal models that we have for any infectious disease. Some of the advantages are the immune systems and anatomy and physiology are highly similar between these species. Transmission and longitudinal studies are possible using these models. Environmental factors can be highly controlled, including the virus stock, the route, the timing of therapies. Any anatomic site can be sampled using these non-human primate models. Effects of additional infections can also be studied. Prevention efficacy can be studied in these models. And the ability to deplete lymphocyte populations to understand fundamental contributions of different immune constituents can be done in these non-human primates. So what I'm going to talk about today is really utilizing these non-human primate models to really advance one of the seminal findings that we've had in HIV disease that was led by Jason Brinchley and Danny Duick and published back in 2006 that demonstrated that in HIV-infected patients and participants, you have significantly increased microbial products systemically in these individuals. This is kind of exemplified by this figure that shows that the plasma LPS levels in HIV chronically infected and those that are in stage was significantly higher than in non-infected individuals and those in acute infection. And this is also really highlighted here by looking at 16x bacterial DNA in the plasma that is highly elevated in HIV-infected individuals. So these data that demonstrated increased plasma LPS and bacterial 16S ribosomal DNA levels in HIV-infected individuals really indicated that persistent GI damage occurs in HIV-infected individuals and leads to this microbial translocation, which can drive this systemic inflammation independent of viral viral proteins and the virus itself. But we wanted to define direct evidence for this process happening. This is a correlative study. And so we went to the non-human primate model. And what we found is that when we looked at SIV uninfected animals in the large bowel versus chronically infected animals that were sacrificed for experimental endpoints, so they're not end-stage AIDS, versus those that were sacrificed because of clinical endpoints, we find a substantial amount of evidence for microbial products that have translocated from the lumen into the host, into the lamina propria of these non-human primates. We showed this by doing quantitative LPS core staining in the large bowel, as well as using a polyclonal antibody to E. coli that identifies many proteobacter species, and we find the same thing. We find evidence of microbial products within the host of these animals. When we quantified the percent of LPS within the colon lamina propria, we see that there's a striking increase during late acute phase of infection that's maintained throughout all courses of disease in the absence of therapeutic intervention. In addition, we found that these microbial products are found distal to the actual colon. So when we look at a gut draining lymph node, we find significant elevation of these microbial products within those lymphoid tissues, and a completely distal lymph node, the axillary lymph node. So this is a lymph node that drains the arm and not the gut. We've also find significant evidence of these microbial products within this systemic site. And when we correlate the amount of LPS or amount of microbial products that we stain in the gut to that which we find in the mesenteric lymph node, we see the striking positive correlation. And when we correlate the amount of microbial products in the mesenteric lymph node compared to the axillary or distal lymph node, we also see the striking positive correlation. And so this SIV non-human primate model was really fundamental for us to be able to understand that GI damage, GI tract damage actually takes place, and microbial translocation is a key feature in these progressive diseases. But we wanted to know a little bit more about the timing of this process. So I'm going to show you here just kind of schematically what I'm going to be showing you histologically using confocal microscopy on the right. The green stains the epithelial barrier. The blue just stains the nuclei within that region. And the red represents the microbial communities as stained by this pan E. coli stain. So prior to infection, we have the bugs in the lumen exactly where we want them to be. And we have this epithelial barrier that has continuity or the lack of a breaching. And you have a normal integrity here. Shortly after infection, so this is an animal that was sacrificed at day 6 post-infection, we do begin to see infection within the lamina propria of the gut. However, we have a maintained epithelial barrier, and although we have inflammation within this region, we don't see evidence of any substantial damage to this epithelial barrier. However, just 8 days later, at a time that's peak of acute infection, day 14, we begin to see these breaches within the epithelial barrier. And where we see these breaches, we find microbial products. And every time we see these breaches, we find these microbial products that have translocated from the lumen into the host. And this is associated with even elevated levels of SIV infection. Take this out just another 7 days, we see that this process is maintained. And by the chronic stage of infection, we can see numerous evidence of these microbial breaches. And where we see these epithelial breaches, we find microbial products that have translocated into the host. And even at end-stage animal that is full-blown simian AIDS, we can see evidence where there's just a complete lack of continuity of the epithelial barrier and just massive translocation, microbial translocation into the host. So one of the things we wanted to ask is does the extent of pre-existing GI tract damage and microbial translocation impact the time to disease progression following SIV disease? And so we were fortunate that we had a particular a model of rapid progression. And these are using a species called the pigtail macaques compared to rhesus macaques. And so when they're infected with SIV-MAC-239, there's a large population that actually progress very rapidly to disease compared to a more gradual disease progression that we see in rhesus macaques. And this is work done by my colleague Jason Brinchley and Nikki Klatt when she was in Jason's lab. And when you look at the level of activation of T cells in these pigtail macaques prior to infection, you actually see a significant elevation of immune activation prior to infection, suggesting to us that perhaps the GI tract is actually damaged in prior to infection in these animals. And so when we looked at that, that's exactly what we saw. So this top is just showing you staining using claudin-3. This is a tight junction molecule, and we use that to measure the continuity of the epithelial barrier. In SIV-uninfected rhesus macaques, we see completely intact epithelial barrier, but in SIV-uninfected pigtail macaques, we see significant amounts of epithelial damage, and this is quantified here on the right. And when we looked at microbial products that have translocated from the lumen into the host, we see significant levels in the pigtail macaques and none in our SIV-uninfected rhesus macaques. So how does this directly link to disease progression? So when we look at the ratio or the extent of damage to the extent of microbial translocation, we also see a positive correlation. And this correlation of microbial products is linked to the amount of activation that's found within the lamina propria. And so we were fortunate to have, in these cohorts of animals, animals that were rapid progressors and those that we refer to as slow progressors. And when we look at the difference between the epithelial continuity in these different animals, here's an SIV-infected slow progressor compared to a classic rapid progressor, we see damage to the epithelial barrier in this animal and an intact epithelial barrier in this slow progressor. And when we quantify that, we can see elevated levels of damage to the GI tract that's indistinguishable from SIV-uninfected pigtail macaques. But these rare animals that don't progress to disease rapidly actually have a maintained epithelial barrier. So this suggests to us that GI tract damage that leads to microbial translocation is a key player in disease progression and systemic inflammation. But what about the bacterial communities that are within the GI of these animals, both before and after infection? And the way that we started to do this is actually looked at bacterial taxa. These are three bacterial taxa that we focused on initially using quantitative PCR approaches. And we took the entire colon section and we simply asked the question quantitatively, what was the proportion of each of these before infection versus after infection? And while there are some subtle differences between at least three of these animals, we did not see significant dysbiosis in animals after infection. However, what about the bugs that actually translocated in these animals that are SIV infected? The way that, this is just quantitatively looking at these different taxa, both before and after infection, we don't see any statistically significant changes there. But when we look within a tissue in which microbial translocation has occurred, the mesenteric lymph node, we see a different picture. We actually begin to see a preferential enrichment for proteobacteria within the mesenteric lymph node of SIV-infected animals, and that's showing you here, and that's significantly increased. And in addition to that, we wanted to know, well, what is the difference in the makeup of these families when we look at the luminal content that's showing you here compared to what is actually translocated within the lamina propria of these infected animals. So we performed laser capture microdissection. We captured luminal content from our sections. We captured areas in which we have evidence of translocation, of microbial translocation, and we actually collected regions of the membrane, or in this case it's kind of represented as glass, that had no tissue. And when we did that, we didn't find any microbial constituents here. But this is the makeup in these two animals of the luminal content demonstrated here. And so the proteobacter representation is much lower than the other communities. But when we looked at those bacteria that actually translocated, we see that enrichment once again of these proteobacter species. We were fortunate, or my lab has spent a lot of time trying to understand the impact of GI damage to HIV disease. And so we developed a experimental colitis non-human primate model. And the way that we did that is we took SIV uninfected animals and we experimentally damaged the GI tract. And we asked the question, does that lead to microbial translocation and systemic immune activation independent of the virus itself? And the answer was yes. And so we asked the question of what was the microbial community makeup within the lumen, in the colon in this case, compared to those bacteria that actually translocated in the absence of SIV infection. So once again, what we found is that the proteobacter taxa represented a small proportion of the microbial communities within the lumen. However, there was a much enriched proteobacter that actually translocated either to the liver or the mesenteric lymph node of these SIV uninfected animals that had GI tract damage. And when you look at that as a proportional representation, you can see that this is a proportional representation within the colon lumen, and this is the proportional representation of these bacterial communities within these translocated tissues, suggesting that microbial translocation is not just a homogeneous event, that certain bacterial communities have preferential access and ability to actually translocate in HIV-infected individuals. So this data has really allowed us to develop a particular model of HIV chronic immune activation and inflammation that's really driven by GI tract damage and microbial translocation. So in HIV infection, you have viral replication that induces this very robust and rapid acute inflammatory response and immune activation that consists of type 1 interferons, pro-inflammatory cytokines, and also homeostatic cytokines. This inflammatory response that's induced very early actually feeds back and augments viral replication within the tissues in which the virus is localized. But this inflammatory response and the virus itself within the GI tract leads to very rapid damage to the GI epithelial barrier. That GI epithelial barrier leads to microbial translocation that feeds in and induces a state of chronic inflammation. So you have a source of inflammatory events independent of the virus. So both feed into this system, and in the absence of therapeutic intervention, you begin to have immunopathology that's classic in this disease. You have lymphoid fibrosis, CD4 T cell loss, and ultimately, in the absence of any intervention, you have these individuals that progress to end-stage events, co-infections, and ultimately death. But what happens in individuals that are treated with antiretroviral therapy? I wish I could provide you a little bit better news, but the news that we currently have is not great. So individuals that are placed on antiretroviral therapy later in disease, so not during that acute time frame, actually have extensive and persistent GI tract damage. And one of the ways that we track GI damage in our human populations in which we take these small biopsies out is we look for a tissue response. So we look for neutrophil inflammation and infiltration into the tissue. And this is a classic inflammatory response to damage to the epithelial barrier. And in HIV-infected patients, we can see this heterogeneous but nonetheless evidence of persistent colitis and damage to the GI epithelial barrier in these individuals. And so neutrophil infiltration and GI tract damage and mucosal apoptosis remains abnormally high despite long-term suppressive antiretroviral therapy. And these are patients, I'm showing you two representative micrographs from individuals that have been on antiretroviral therapy for anywhere from 4 to 12 years, a median of 10 years. And so the model for this in the context of antiretroviral therapy is that while antiretroviral therapy does reduce viral infection and viral replication, it does not necessarily impact the source, a major source of systemic inflammation, and that's damage to the epithelial barrier that leads to persistent microbial products translocating into the host and sustaining a level of systemic inflammation and immune activation that is elevated over HIV uninfected matched populations. Ultimately, this is a significant source of comorbidities and reduced life expectancy that really needs to be addressed. So with that, I just want to thank the individuals that did the work in my lab. I started this work when I was at the Frederick National Laboratory and have continued this on at Oregon Health and Science University. Kathleen Bussman in my group, and also Ing-Pei Hao, and also a large suite of collaborators both within the intramural government system in the U.S. as well as around the globe. And thank you for your time.